Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chodsk. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Carpcast, our coming of age edition. We can be legally homosexual.
You've never needed that.
why else can we do it? 21? We can go to Vegas.
You can drink in America.
Yeah, we can drink in America. We can take it up the rear. What else?
Yeah, we're going to edit this start out already. What you do with your spons is totally up to you.
It's daft, isn't it? How old do you have to be to smoke in this country now? Is it 18?
It's 18, yeah.
It's not when I drop my little one off from school. All the 14-year-olds, they stand around the corner about 40 yards away from school, all smoking, all girls as well. I've never seen any lads. It's always the girls. Yeah. And like, one thing like smokers don't realise about non-smokers is that you stink. And they can probably smell it 60 yards away in school, let alone when you go and sit in the class. Yeah. So
it also gives them away, because we had it at school again. They'd always come back after the break, after the crafty fag, with about 3 packets full of chewing gum in the mouth, chewing away, thinking, oh, this will cover it up, no one will notice.
When I was at school, there was I was in a school of just over 1,000 people, Fallybroom it was, in Macclesfield, where it just opened. For any of you people from Macclesfield that might be aware of it, it was the first year it was open, I think, or it had been open 1 year when I got it. And there was over 1,000 people in the school, and then there was probably 6 people that smoked. I'd never heard of drugs. My daughter's 15, and there certainly wasn't anyone that was gay. There's 3 people in my daughter's class that are gay, guys and girls, openly gay. That just wouldn't have happened. Not that there's anything wrong with being gay, but like when I was at school, like I say, there was 6 smokers in 1,200 pupils, let alone there was like, I mean, it's showing my age now. There was like literally nobody with separated parents. The 2 or 3 kids that did have separated parents were, you know, everybody knew type thing. And there's probably 3 kids in my daughter's school, their parents are still together in these days. Well, it just shows that it's changed even in our lifetime. We are, oh, I am an old git.
You are, you're so old. When you went to school, you used to write on a piece of slate.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, it just goes to show, every time I get the stories off my daughter now, you know, and there's a lot of them, they're taking drugs, like tripping drugs in class, doing crazy stuff, you know, and like, I don't know, like they still had the slipper and the trainer. Well, the headmaster had the slipper and what did he teach? Our form teacher had the trainer. If you were naughty, you got bent over, pants pulled down from the whole class and you got whacked. I'm sure I can probably get a compensation for that now.
Yeah. Are you traumatised in older life, or do you develop some strange fetishes?
I'm left-handed, and my mum was left-handed. I remember her telling me if she attempted to write with her left hand when she was at school, they got smacked, properly smacked on the knuckles with a ruler, like big wooden rulers they had in them days. You know, you got physically injured. Can you imagine that these days if your child come home from school saying, yeah, the teacher slapped me around the face? Like, they'd be in jail the next day.
Yeah, it must have been just before I went to school that was all outlawed, because there was no cane, no, you know, corporal punishment. But, you know, what we did get, you know, we had a headmaster we used to just call Batman, because he'd be walking around with a mortarboard and a cape on him, you know, called Mr. Stevenson. And, oh, he was ruthless. But we had another one, a deputy head called Mr. Shutt, and he had the strongest Welsh accent you've ever heard. And he used to go into proper fits of rage, shouting at the class, but his asking with that accent was that strong. He couldn't do anything but just burst out laughing at him, which made him go even worse.
Our headmaster had a cane, but he'd never used it. He used to use his slipper. But yeah, our form teacher, he was the nasty man. Like, he was the one everybody feared, and we had to have him every day, not just for certain lessons. But yeah, he had the trainer, and you did not want the trainer. Was it a running that, shoe with spikes? Beating 13-year-old kids, 12-year-old kids, physically beating them. It seems unimaginable now.
Yeah, what's this got to do with carp fishing?
Yeah, not a lot. We're just reminiscing. This is our soapbox. So, but yeah, it's just amazing when my daughter comes home and like, you know, this is, oh yeah, so-and-so, he was on LSD in class and they're all taking these legal highs and, you know, so-and-so's going out on a date with a new girlfriend today. And
legal,
you know,
don't mean safe, does it?
the other guy, you know, so-and-so's gay. I blame Hollyoaks, me. There's more gay people in that per square mile than the entire world. They all watch it. Hollyoaks got a lot to answer for. If they all turn out to be serial killers as well, we're in deep trouble.
That's Criminal Minds.
I'll tell you what you wouldn't want to get whacked with very hard, and that's Simon Crowe's book that I've got in front of me. Listen to this. I don't know if you can hear that, but it's about...
Oh, I was expecting your good lady to scream then as well.
Adventures of a Carp Angler. I mean, I've not had a chance to read it. I've just flicked through. It's amazing. I know you had it last week, but I'd been away. What a fantastic looking book. I'm going to really enjoy reading it.
Yeah,
you can buy it from giftsforanglers.co.uk. gifts4anglers.co.uk. And if you did want to buy it or anything else that they sell, then you can enter the code CARPCAST5 at the checkout and that will get you a nice hefty discount. It does support us as well, so if you would like to buy Crowe's book, which we are going to do a full review on, we're certainly going to mention it in the Worth a Look section, but they sell tons of other stuff, don't they, Mark?
Oh, without a doubt, there's key rings, DVDs. I had a look at the leaflet that came through the other day with some stuff. DVDs, there's just about every fishing DVD and book you could ever imagine, with the exception of Waiting for Waddle, but you can't get that anywhere, unfortunately.
No, it's a collector's item, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd kill for one of those. But, yeah, Monkey Climber clothing, 40s sunglasses, Fat Fish clothing, just... tons of gift ideas, we've said before. Just strategically leave it open in front of the wife or partner.
Yeah, they do socks and carp-shaped pillows, which is perfect for a Christmas present for me. I've never got enough socks. The ones I've got, holes in them.
You really want a carp-shaped pillow, don't you?
I do, yeah. And I know where to get one. giftsforanglers.co.uk and use the discount code CARPCAST5 at the checkout. It doesn't include subscriptions to the magazines, but it includes absolutely everything else, all the gifty stuff, all the books, all the DVDs. I'll tell you what, talking of books, I found a box full of Jim Shelley books. I was cleaning out a room the other day, which I didn't know I had. Yeah, I probably banged them on eBay, actually, really cheap. Because I had a load of them for people listening to this that don't know. I wrote Jim Shelley's first book because he couldn't. And we ended up falling out towards the end of it because he tried to shaft me. I ended up getting sent boxes and boxes and boxes of said books, which I sold a load of eBay, sold a load on eBay, and I also sold a load to Carp Fishing News, which is now giftsforanglers.co.uk. And I'm guessing they've sold out of them because it was quite a few years ago. But, yeah, I've just found a box of them, so I'll be selling them extremely cheap on eBay. If I get them up, I'll bang a link. If you haven't read it, then, you know, personal issues aside, the guy's an amazing angler. He's caught loads of fish. Yeah, it's book club this week, is it? We've got Crowe's book, Shelley's book.
I'm still selling
the knowledge DVDs as well. Still, they're still flying out, to be fair. People like them way more than when I first brought them out 5 years ago. The power of the carp cast. But yeah, they're on eBay. Two DVDs for 10 quid. So I'll bang the link under the show notes and stuff. Thank you to all the people that have already bought them.
Yeah, you mentioned the power of the carp cast. Which carp cast was it where we spoke about the P-line that we use?
Oh, my days. I get messages every week for people. Where can I buy that P-line?
I've had two this week.
Two this week, yeah. I mean, yeah. If you listen to the episode, the whole point of the episode is that we can't actually get hold of it because we really struggled. They used to have a European distribution centre and they now won't sell direct because they sold the licence to a shop in Newcastle who don't actually stock the best product that they do. So if you are listening, I forget the name of the place. It's Moonfleet stock extrusion, because it's the best all-round line on the market, I think. And you have the rights to sell it. So please get it in, because we can at least direct all of our listeners to you who wish to buy it. Carpcast 5, giftsforanglers.co.uk, or the Knowledge DVDs, if you want to buy them, then by all means. It keeps me eating week on week, which I need to, because my boiler's blown up this week. We've had no heating or hot water for a week. Guy's come today with the new parts, and then fitted the new parts, still doesn't work, and he's like, your boiler is kaput, which is not what you want to hear, because boilers don't come cheap. I smell today. Say again.
Get some more clothes on. That's what we do in Yorkshire. We don't do eating. Not unless there's frost on the inside of the windows and we think about it.
I could go into everything that's gone wrong this week. It hasn't been a great week, to be fair. Not being too negative, but I've not been fishing since last week. Have you been out at all?
I have. I had a couple of nights on my syndicate, the Big Pit Icon, and I did my 10th black night and then snapped the black streak with two fish on the 11th.
Oh, yeah, you caught a couple. Was it on the new moon? It's been new moon this week, hasn't it?
I didn't even look at the moon, to be honest. I just fish when I can fish. But it was quite an eventful session, weather-wise, anyway.
Yeah, it's been really windy and super mild, isn't it?
Oh, bad hair day. I fished the first night, because I rushed down after work and I've got literally next to no daylight left. I'm setting up on dusk, so I'm fishing swims that I know. I can wrap me rods up on the distance sticks, get them out, and then worry about baiting them off afterwards. So anyway, the first swim I fished, there's a bit of a spit to the right of it. And the baiting from that swim is a lot easier from the end of the spit. So I get to the end of the spit to bait up. It's just pitch black and dark. And when I got to the end, I met the bailiff, Martin, sat on the end with two rods out. I'm not going to say this spit being part of the sailing club, which you're not technically supposed to be on.
No. Bubbled up the bailiff.
Yeah, he has permission, fair. It's the sailing club that run the fishing. It's not as shifty as it sounds. But here we stood there chatting, as you do, and then it started raining, only slightly, so we didn't really think anything of it. And then, to the right of where we stood, probably, I'm going to guess, 150, 60 metres, is an island. And then we couldn't see the island because it was raining so heavy. And it's a sort of rain, heavy, that you think, I need to get out of it. And by the time you've thought of it, you're piss wet through anyway.
Yeah.
So I ran back round to our swim, shut my bivvy door. Unfortunately, not too much had got in. But when I went back round, because I left my rod and bait there, Martin was just pouring his gear back in his van, absolutely drenched.
Oh, and there's a subject for you. How many fish have you caught in the rain?
Very few, thankfully. In the hour after, in the hour following a rainstorm, loads.
Yeah, yeah. I can remember getting wet many, many times. But I've got friends that just won't go when it's raining. Just like, I never catch in the rain. But I think there's certain pegs they like in the rain as well. Anywhere with an inflow where it comes in faster. I've caught plenty of fish in the rain. I can think of many stories of me getting drenched. I remember being on a place called Thornycroft Mere. It's like an estate lake owned by the Prince Albert. Years ago, I was a kid. It's probably 30 years ago. Used to fish on there a lot. And it was quite narrowish, if I remember, and we used to fish kind of down the middle, kind of the deepest point. I remember it absolutely chucking it down one day, and especially when you were young, like a bite was a really big deal. So if anybody's optonics went off, you were looking out all excited and stuff, even though it wasn't me. And I heard this screamer, like an absolute screamer, and it was peeing it down, like really, really peeing it down. And it just kept going. And it was the guy in the next peg, and I looked out, and I just seen him like when I get a bite, and the faster the run goes, the faster I go, like the more chaos happens. If it's absolutely screaming, there's a very good chance I'm tripping over the door while trying to pull my boots on and, you know, rolling headfirst down the mud. Like, the more my alarm screams, the more chaos is going to happen. And his was one noting. And I looked out thinking, why has he not hit it? And he's there, he's pulling his boots on, and he's got this big raincoat, and he's pulling it over him, and he's doing the belt up, and he's zipping up the middle. I'm looking at him thinking, just hit it, just get hold of the rod. And then he got himself all wrapped up, and then, yeah, bang, there's the fish. I'm just like, wow, props to you. I couldn't do that. I'd be flapping, I'd be out of my T-shirt and all sorts. I'd have got drenched and then gone, should have put a coat on.
Yeah, I do that all the time. The number of times I've run out, even, I'll be honest, I did it with my second fish this week, barefoot.
Yeah.
Not what you're going to do in November, no matter how mild it is.
Yeah, I've barefooted millions of times in the mud and ruined the only socks you've got with you or whatever, but it's just panic, you know. The alarm's a disaster. Somebody should make an alarm that instead of screaming, just goes, beep, beep, beep.
Just get some delphins to turn the sensitivity right down, or change the tone to, instead of, you know, absolutely wailing at you, just say, so you... Alarm goes off. It says, excuse me, there's a fish here. Come on, when you're ready.
Yeah, just something really calm.
There's nothing calm. I've heard carp fishing described as something like, you know, hours of peace and moments of madness.
That's one of the beauties of carp fishing, because it is quite serene. You know, everything's peaceful and picturesque and pleasant, and you're enjoying nature. And, like, I don't know what else goes from, like, super calmness to absolute chaos in literally two beeps. Like, it just changes.
Oh, yeah, you can tell how on edge we were last week, sat in your van.
Oh, yeah. Beep. Ooh.
Yeah, even, you know, notwithstanding the fact that when you go, ooh, you sound camper than a field of pink tents. But even after, you know, I'm like 40 years old and you're nearly in your 70s.
Yeah, I'm 43, thank you.
You're not far ahead, but I'll never catch up.
No, you never lose that buzz, though, do you, for the, you know, for like, even like, say, a beep out the blue, it's like, wow. You know, it just sets your heart racing, doesn't it? And I remember years ago, when I was younger, and I'd go fishing for 2 days. And in them days, when you're young, you kind of used to be up all night. Like, I mean, the gear wasn't very good. Your feet were sticking out the bottom of a 45-inch brolly, you know, with a bin bag over the end of your kit bag or whatever. And, like, getting through the night was a chore rather than sort of these days where we've got bed chairs more comfortable than my bed at home. You know, I've got an indulgence wide boy, which you can spread out on, and it's just super, super comfy. And I can go to sleep if there's no fish on the scene. You know, it's a good 8 hours. You know, I use them MAR3 alarms, which don't beep really when the line's tightening, so you don't get any false beeps. So literally, If I'm blanking, if I don't catch a fish, which is, you know, fairly regular, once I go to sleep, you know, I can turn me back on the lake if I want it in the bed. I can sleep on my side, on my back, and the alarm ain't going to beep unless a fish runs. And years ago, it was the opposite. And you were like on tenterhooks all the time. I mean, the original Optonics, they weren't very loud either. So your kind of ears had to be listening for them all the time. I mean, now we've got sounder boxes right by our ear. You're never missing a single beep. And years ago, it wasn't like that. You know, the original Optonics were dead quiet. And like your ears were tuned in to the point of I'd come back from a 2 day session, which felt like a marathon because you're up for most of it. I'd get back and there'd be a beep on the telly and I'd actually jump out the chair. Like I'd actually come flying out. Your heart would race, not all the same things when you're on the bank. I mean, it's got so much more comfortable now with all the big companies, your Foxes and Nashes doing sort of pretty decent equipment.
Pretty decent. I think it's amazing. And I tell you what, the word hardcore should be struck from the carper's dictionary because there is nothing hardcore about carping anymore whatsoever.
No, I agree.
I'm going hardcore winter carping in my twin skin bivvy, in my, you know, treble skinned peach skin sleep system bag with my tablet holder on the side of the bed chair.
Yeah, tablet holders, iPads, you know, programmable alarms from the bivvy and everything.
Tablet holders are good because you can download the Carpcast to your iPad.
Ah, yes, you can. Yeah. 21,000 downloads or something did we have last month? Which is
it was about 20 unreal. And a half, I believe. But a big jump. Well, each month is a big jump. It's
yeah, it's jumping more than 25-30% every month, isn't it, at the minute? Which is
we're on a roll, and you know what? We seem to be on quite a roll with the guests we have in.
Yeah, we've had some great guests. Enjoyed Chris Ball last week. Part two is coming up in a little bit for those of you that enjoy Carpi history stories. And you've done an interview with
Ian Russell.
Ian Russell this week, yeah, which will be on next week's show. We're fishing on the bank next week, 25th, I think. I've got a bit of there'll be two on the bank interviews that week. I'm not going to ruin the surprise for you, but yeah, we're meeting a lady angler on the Monday, Tuesday. I'm going to go to Cromwell, and then I'm going to head down to a place I've never been to before, actually, Bluebell, the Bluebell Complex. I'm going to go down fish one of their lakes there, and we are meeting somebody else who's full of stories.
You're not giving much away, are you?
No, we don't want to ruin it. We don't want to tell you who's coming up, but there are lots and lots of great guests. Now we're weekly, there's, you know, going to be somebody decent every week between now and ever, hopefully. Hopefully there will never be just me and you. Yeah, we've got loads, and, you know, there'll be a time where we can start getting the original guests back on. I mean, I'm looking forward to getting Nashie back on again at some point.
I think we should, around January, on the Carpcast first birthday, Kevin Nash was good enough to be our first ever guest, and I think we should have him for the anniversary if we can get him, if he's got time.
Yeah, he said he will come back on again, so although I'd like to record the interview on the Cops Lake, January's probably not a good time to fish here. What an anniversary to have. Why can't he have it in May? Go down and fish on there.
Yeah, with several false takes, so we have to re-record many times over a week.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And we can't put it out unless we get a 60 while we're chatting. So I'll tell you where we are going to go next year. We're going to go to Christophe and Lee's Lake, St. Amand Leisure, which is a fantastic venue in France, and they're doing a special offer for listeners of the Carpcast. They're taking bookings for the winter and next year. And it's basically a family holiday venue. It's a runs water with loads and loads of carp. There's over 400 carp in there, lots of fish between 20 and 47 pounds. You get like five anglers on there. You can sleep eight people in the house. You get a traditional French farmhouse that's fully furnished. It's open all year round, and it's a special price of £850 instead of £1,250 for Carpcast listeners, which works out like £170 each. You can drive and survive, or you can fly out there and they'll supply the equipment and tackle for you. It's 45 minutes from Limoges Airport. There's a video on YouTube as well that you can watch, and we'll post it up on our page. And you can go to the website, stamandleisure.com. St. Amand is STAMAND, leisure, stamandleisure.com. And if you would like to speak to Lee or Chris about the lake, you can get Lee on 07854-857-374. And Chris is 07428 183 018, and we'll do a review from there. We'll probably do a live Carpcast where we're hauling. I know one of our pals, Roger, went last year with his family, and they had a fantastic time. It's really geared up for taking the missus and kids. It's in a really nice area of France, and it's run city with a lot of decent fishing there. And I think we are going to go in the spring, aren't we, and take our families.
Oh, look, you know, I've never cast a line in France yet.
Have you not?
No, never been, but, you know, I've spent that much time, effort and cash doing the do over here. It's not left much, so now I'm quite looking forward to it. Now I'm getting relaxed in my older age.
Yeah, I definitely give Lee or Chris a ring on those numbers and have a chat with them about it. It's like £500 off as well, £850 for, like, you know, you can get two families in there. In that house, £850 for a week's holiday in a beautiful place, private farmhouse. It's an extremely decent holiday, I think. and one which we should be doing. StArmandLeisure.com and give Lee or Chris a ring on the numbers that we just said. Shall we move on the net?
Yeah, well, there's one thing that we have done on the last week since the last... Well, it was the last show the same night, Friday night. I popped up to the York Carp group for their first meeting of the winter. They had Simon Crowe talking.
Ah, yeah, you said you were going up there. Julian was up there as well.
Yeah, got with Jules in Bullet. If you know Roger Hind, he runs Selby Three Lakes. He's a Yorkshire legend.
Yeah.
Speaking of Yorkshire legends, Jeff Crawford has resurrected the group. He's run it forever. He's part of Yorkshire carp fishing history, that man. And his Motorhead t-shirts, which he wasn't wearing. I was quite disappointed in him. But, you know, I'll keep it brief. But my point I was just going to get, there's lots of these local meetings popping up, and just go support them. They're a good night, a good social.
It's that time of year, isn't it, where people start to hang the rods up and, you know, you start seeing the slideshows and stuff. Well, I guess there aren't any slideshows anymore. Does anybody have slides?
It's PowerPoint or Keynotes if you've got a Mac, which also, your Northern Angling Show, you're 20th and 21st February, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yeah, it's absolutely Saturday, Sunday.
Because on the 19th, I'll be talking for the York Carp Group.
Ah, you're going to go and bore them to death in York?
I'm going to try not to. I was thinking about it. What I'm going to do, I'm just going to look through all my pictures and I'm just going to talk a load of rubbish. I'm not going to look for big fish in that. I'm just going to look for funny stories.
Yeah, a little bit of a stand-up show. We should do a Carpcast tour. We should go and do a live theatre tour and talk rubbish.
I'll tell you what, Crowe did say to me on Friday... You had a suggestion for the Carpcast, which will get several people all on Skype at the same time and ask them what a running is.
Yeah.
You know, select the people, you'll get one of your, your staunch, English fish supporters, someone who just fishes or anything and doesn't care, and see what the result is, like the blue touch paper.
Well, I've been looking into potentially streaming the Carpcast live. So I've been speaking with some people at Twitch, which is it's actually a gaming platform for streaming games. It's an extremely large platform. In fact, it's the third busiest site in the world for traffic, bigger than YouTube.
Wow.
Bearing in mind Netflix is number one. This is number three anyway. In fact, YouTube might be number two. I think it's Netflix, YouTube and Twitch, which is good because I hadn't really heard about it until a lot of the poker streamers stream on it. But it's a really big gaming platform. I mean, some of the competitions that they have like a million viewers at once. It's ridiculous. But one of the benefits of it, obviously we can stream. Imagine now if... you could see our face cams on Skype and obviously you could hear this live. I mean, you'd still be able to get it on iTunes and all the ways that you get it now, but we would have a broadcast time for the show. Let's say we broadcast at 6 p.m. every Friday. You would be able to tune in live and obviously you can interact with us. So we would still have our Skype interview with a guest, but you can ask questions live or you can, chirp in, about anything we're saying in real time. So, if you've got an opinion to offer, we won't choose to answer the trolls, but you can chime in. So I know there is a streaming service on YouTube, but the chat's not as good on YouTube, whereas Twitch chat is really good. You get emojis and stuff, and we can make our own emojis, so people can send us carp god giveth emojis or whatever it is. But yeah, it's something we're planning for the future, but I do hope to do it. It's a little bit of work on my side to be able to bang all the jingles and stuff in live, but it'd also save on the editing of the shows because we just upload the live show. And I think the best bit about it is the chat, that it's more interactive with people that are listening live. If we've got, say, Crowe on, and you want to ask him about a particular story or something, you can chime in. And or when we had Simon Scott on, fishy expert, you can be asking him questions as we go, stuff that maybe we've not thought of or a different angle. So yeah, hopefully we can make it work. I'm, like I said, I'm just chatting with Twitch at the minute because they are a gaming platform, and obviously this is a fishing show. But the Scott Ball, who's one of the people behind Twitch, is an angler, which is why I've contacted him specifically. He's American, and they do love their fishing and hunting over there. Hello to all our American listeners as well. America is our second most listened to country behind the UK. I'm going to get the stats up at the minute, actually, the SoundCloud stats, because the ones that are in the top five are not countries you would have guessed would be top five. Can you guess any off the top of your head, Mark?
Well, so we've got UK, then America, then...
UK is number one, obviously. United States is two. Guess what three is?
I know it's going to be something like Poland.
Brazil.
Brazil?
These are the SoundCloud stats.
They don't have carp in Brazil. The piranhas have eaten them all.
Number two, most listened to country outside of United Kingdom, United States, is Brazil, followed by Germany, Belgium, Sweden. Sweden. It's cold.
Sweden. Yeah, but they're all
London. Then we have Australia and Egypt ahead of Holland. Russia behind that. Switzerland. Then India, then Canada.
I can understand Canada. India.
India.
How, you know.
It's unreal, kind of how far we've come. Oh, and props to Mark Hammond, who is our most listened person. Don't know who you are, Mark, but you're obviously a keen fanboy of the Carpcast, and we may have to get you on at some point as a super fan. I think maybe we'll, when we start doing some merchandise, we can get you on, ask you a load of questions about the Carpcast. If you answer them all right, we'll give you a hoodie or a hat or something. And that's a feature we can do, super fan. We'll have fan of the week. If you're an avid Carpcast fan, then get in touch. We'll get you on. We'll ask you a load of questions about the Carpcast. And if you get them all right, then we'll give you something.
We can ask questions like, what is the furthest away we've been from our rods on a take? Oh, maybe not.
No, I don't think we ever actually revealed that one.
No. I think it's only about 10 foot.
I'm pretty sure that members of the EA and everyone else, so we only said that for comedic value. We don't actually leave our rods when fishing.
No, it's very naughty. Oh, what is the deepest Jamie has waded into a lake to land a bream?
Yeah. I've got a picture of me in the local park lake in Blackpool, actually, Stanley Park, where fish had gone round a tree, and I had to wade out knowing it's like 4 or 5 foot deep and it's just silty. But obviously I didn't have any wading equipment, so I stripped down to my boxers in the middle of a sunny afternoon. And I'm sure other people have done that. Ah, this is a story, actually. Roger Bacon, a fan of the show and friend, I'm sure he's listening to this. He'll remember this one. So we've gone to Chorley. We've gone off at a tangent in the show, haven't we? There's been very little structure and lots of chat.
That's why podcasts are so great.
Yes.
No rules.
There are no rules. So, yeah, so we've gone to Chorley Water Park in Manchester, which one summer, a good few years ago now. And I'd fished it, I think we'd fished it the week before and had a couple of bites off this island. There was like this hole you could cast to on the island. I don't know how far out it was, 70 yards or something. And then landed in this hole, like it did a few bites. So I'm getting set up. I've got my bivvy up and sat on my bed chair. I've got the first rod tied me PVA stick that I always use, banged it out. It's hit the clip nicely, dropped in the hole, put the rod on the rest. And sat down to do the next rod. Almost instantly, I've managed to leave the rod still in the clip, and it screamed, like it's just ripped. And I looked down from the first beat. Ben and Roger's like sat on a bucket right next to the rod, like pretty close to touching his knee, and I'm in my bivvy, which is right next to the rods as well. You know, almost touching distance from hearing the beep to looking at the rod and about to spring into action, it torpedoed into the lake. Like, and I mean torpedoed, it just shot there way too quick to like reach forward and grab it. Obviously I'd left it in the clip and it was clipped up pretty tight because I'm, you know, cast really tight to an island. And Anyway, I ended up stripping off, going in for it. We ended up casting my marker rod over the line from the side, pulling it so it lifted the rod up. Then I've gone in for it, managed to get the rod, and the fish is still attached, but it's now caught up in snag. So I had to swim out bollock naked to the island.
Oh, you didn't have to add that.
Well, I did have my boxers on, but they might as well not been on. And you drenched. They weren't really meant for swimming. Yeah, I had to swim to the island to free the fish. It was a good job it was warm. Did you not go in pit two in the winter?
Not in the winter, no, but I have been in for a fish. Well, it was my first capture of a fish they called the import. I remember it because you were stood there, you held the rod while I went in. It was a sunken island swim.
And does that mean it's my fish? I landed it?
No, I nearly drowned for it. I'm claiming it. Because it was deep margin, so I'm not even a rod length out, and it's up to my shoulders. I'm just pushing the line, trying to free it from all these weeds it's tangled in. And I lost my footing, and I went all the way under. Just as the fish came free and kind of like rolled under my chin as I come back up.
who went in the Terminator? That's the one I remember, and it was like March or something. It was really cold. Obviously, being a deep lake, like February, March, the coldest the water ever gets on there.
I can't remember anyone doing that, but whoever's done it has taken a hell of a risk.
Ah, yeah, it's very, very dangerous in there, isn't it?
In anywhere, to be honest, we do not recommend it.
Yes.
Get your mate to do it.
Yeah, that Cholton story, I've never seen a rod go so fast in my life. It just actually torpedoed, and it flattened both the rests. I use single bank sticks. Like, it just flattened the alarm and flattened the rear rest. They just hit the deck as the rod shot through it and straight in. I never landed the fish. I saw it. I touched it with my foot while I was, like, trying to untangle
the... That doesn't count as a capture.
No, I was trying to untangle the line from the trees. But, yeah. What fun that was. right, let's move on, because we've been nearly an hour already. We've got part two of Chris Ball to get through. Still not covered everything on our show notes yet, have we?
Or anything on them, to be fair.
No, cool. Well,
are we going to do some on the net? There's one or two bits.
Yep, it's on the net.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Go ahead.
Right, this is a post following our last Carpcast. You know, when you mentioned you'd seen a post online about someone mentioning basically what makes top anglers, and if we all had the same time, would they be top anglers?
Yeah, I saw that.
Some of the replies seemed a bit salty. Well, we had a reply on our page from Ollie Spud, who made that.
And yeah, he was the lad that made the post, wasn't he? Yeah, when I said people being salty, it was more the comments. It wasn't his... I mean, his post was obviously contentious, sparking the debate. But, yeah, it wasn't anything particularly nasty from him. It was more the people underneath, you know, that did kind of seem to... it was the usual stuff you hear. Yeah, if I had all the time in the world, I'd catch them fish. Yeah, if I had free bait, I'd catch them fish. And it's just utter rubbish. You know, I've fished with some of these guys, you know, your Daryl Pecks, your John Mack. I've fished with them, and these guys are just better than me. You know, they're more observant. They see more. They're tuned in more. They know what to do. They know to make the right decision. You know, by the time you've thought about something and think you've worked something out, they're already in the peg. You know, they've worked out before you. And fishing is a puzzle, you know, when you're especially big fish fishing, when you're fishing lower stock lakes with large fish in them, you're basically trying to piece incomplete bits of information together to work out, you know, the fish's habits, what they like eating, what they don't like eating, the times they like eating, the places they eat in the day, the places they sunbathe, the places they eat and that, you know, there's a whole load of incomplete bits of information you need to put together, and some people are just better at it. You know, that is a fact.
Draw a similarity between Ollie's question and match fishing, where people do have exactly the same time frame and you get top matchmen.
Of course, yeah. People with exactly, yes, you can draw a better peg, but generally, I mean, you're conventional. You look at the Fishermania Lake and stuff, that's literally, it's a donut. It's a round lake with a island. supposedly even. You know, the fish can go wherever they want. It's as neutral a fishery as you could imagine. Yes, there are, you know, hot pegs and stuff, and the wind blowing a certain way can make a difference. But, you know, it's a circle. But, yeah, you know, it's very naive to think that, yeah, just because if you had free bait and whatever. And they don't get free bait without having already been better than everybody else.
Free bait has to be earned, and it's qualified. But it's not free because you still have to work for it. You have to do shows, you write articles, you make videos, you promote things. You know, companies do not give away free bait if they're not getting stuff in return, which is why a lot of people's sponsorships last one or two seasons and then they're gone.
Yeah, yeah, like every angler that is, quote, sponsored has a contract, you know, and that contract will involve doing X amount of shop days a year, X amount of trade shows across the winter, all which cost you money, time off work sometimes, depending on where you work. I worked out what I use per year in bait, and, you know, for the bits of remuneration I've had in the past, I could almost certainly have just paid for everything I've had, you know, for the equivalent work. You know, if you, what would you want for a day's wages? 100 quid, 150 quid? If you're a tradesman or, you know, you've got a skill, you know, 40, 50 quid or 100 quid for us to go down south, for me to go down south and back for a show, you know, one like Essex or somewhere, it's 120 quid return, food on the way, both ways, a day off work, your time. It ain't cheap. And nothing is for free. You can be assured of that. We've had this conversation so many times, but there's literally, you can count on one hand, people that paid to go fishing. And it ain't footballers' wages.
It certainly ain't. Right, while we're on the subject of top anglers, our next on the net thing up are in the notes that I've noticed, Darrell Peck has landed his 50th 40.
Yeah, that's impressive, isn't it?
Outstanding.
If you didn't listen to Daryl's episode of the Carp Cast, you ought to, because it was a cracker, just as he got back from the Orient. And if you didn't hear the Orient stories, he had his van burnt out on the lake while he was playing a 50, which is a pretty nice story. It's a cracking episode, and it also sparked a little bit of debate. The great Mark Holmes, Daryl Peck, Fishgate debate. Go and check out the Mark Holmes latest episode as well. But yeah, Daryl, 54 is, I don't know where the lake is, but I know it's local to his house because
a fish called Black Spot from Bayswater Syndicate.
Oh, is it Bayswater he's fishing? Yeah, well, it's got 50 in there as well. And he made a post something on the lines of fishing down the road from his house for 40s and 50s with his mates. What life couldn't be better.
Well, he lives in Essex. Every puddle's got a 40, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Is that just the Yorkshire view?
Yeah. No green-eyed monster. But yeah, that's a hell of a lot of 40-pound carp. And well done to Darrell. I'm sure he's going to be having a few more because there's some cracking fish in Bayswater, which is Gary Bay's of Nash Bait fame. Gary Bay's is lakes, if you didn't know. There's a day ticket lake and a syndicate lake there. Never fished them, but they are amazing. I remember when they were first dug, you know, I spoke to Gary a lot back in those days. And we need Gary on the show, by the way. I keep forgetting him on the list. But yeah, well done to Daryl. We've seen it on the net, so it made it on the net. I think it's probably a good time to get Chris Ball back in now for part two, because we've waffled on for way too long.
Yeah, waffling is good, and here's part two with Chris Ball.
There's Pete there, Pete Springate, with the famous Yovni brace, which was a record brace at the time, 1978.
So that was a 36 and a 38,
that's right? That's it, yeah, you're doing very well, yeah. 36.5, 38.5. A lot of people that have got carp fever, or the first edition of Carp Fever, Maddox's Carp Fever, it was the picture on the back cover, that's what people remember. And fortunately, Richie had an original print that Peter had given him, and Richie very kindly let me have that, so I do have an original print of that. There's a picture, couple of pictures here of Chris Yates, and then Chris for many, many years. Fished with him on and off over the years as well. The picture I took, I guess, in the late 60s of him, in the water, up to his waist in water, rescuing a fish out of some lily pads, absolutely wringing wet, that his brother caught. And there's a picture next to that. This one might interest people. When Passion for Angling finished, I was a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit involved in Passion for Angling. And obviously I knew Chris and Bob, and I got to know Hugh Miles as well. When it was finished, I don't know what had happened at the Secret Lake, this one where Harry's monster lives. So yeah. The Monster Myths episode centres around this lake and them trying to catch Harry's monster. And caught one for the camera, a lovely common, and Bob James lost that one. Everybody who's in the program will remember what happened there. But for some reason, I don't know whether the owner sort of clamped up and didn't allow anybody else to go, but they lost, Bob and Chris lost the sort of access to fish there after the filming had finished. And the filming finished in 1992 for Passion. The following year, for some reason or other, Chris got a day there back at this lake. And it was the year when my book, The King Carp Waters, was released. It was released in November that year. And I had a little book launch party. I mean, a very small affair compared to the modern day ones like they have at the Land's End pub. I invited people that had helped me with the book, you know. And there was, I don't know, half a dozen or so. And Chris and Bob came, as they'd help me. And when Chris came in the door that evening, he said to me, before I go this evening, I must show you a picture of a carp I've just caught. And I went, oh, great, okay, Chris. Anyway, hours later, I'd forgotten about this, when he's going at 12 o'clock at night, he suddenly threw out of his pocket a picture of a glorious sort of mid-20 common. And he said, I caught it from Harry's Lake this year. I managed to get a day. And he caught it on Sweetcorn. And he very kindly gave me this picture, and it resides here in the special album. So it's an original print of that.
I remember that episode. I really started that Monster Myths episode actually looking through, was it one of old Donald Leaney's stocking records?
Yes, that's right. That was Harry Teasdale they were with, who was the keeper on that estate. And, that particular volume that Bob and Chris were showing Harry was one of 13 invoice books. Yeah. They were sort of, I don't know, 13 by 9 in size. And they contained hundreds and hundreds, well, the complete transactions from, I don't know, the mid-20s, 1925, 1928, right through to about 1955. And they've been much talked about. For many years, I had half a dozen of those volumes here, which I've sort of scrutinised and what have you. And they were left in Donald Leaney's will to Chris Yates. And only recently they've all sort of been reunited again, these 13 volumes. And in fact, they're being looked after and being investigated by Mark Walshingham, of Ashmead.
Ashmead, yeah.
Yeah, Mark Walshingham, who for quite a long time, though he isn't now, but for quite a long time was very high up in the National Trust. He was, I mean, I passed over these 6 volumes I had to mark at some stage in the last few years. He was investigating National Trust properties that had been stopped with Donald Leaney's Galatian carp, yeah?
Yeah. Did he find any...
Here's it. Pardon? Yeah.
I said, did he find any mysterious whackers?
What has happened over the years, there's many, many, many people, dozens and dozens over, I don't know, a 10-year period, that inquired with me whether I could look for such and such, you know, a place that was thought to be stopped, yeah, with Donald Leaney, Surrey Trout Farm Fish, etc., etc. I can say, I mean, it got to stage, there were so many requests, I had to sort of, you know, I had to do them in bulk. I couldn't do them individually because it takes so long. And I can say that in sort of 90% of the cases, it came to nothing at all. Mainly because there just isn't the information on the invoice itself to indicate exactly where they got. Obviously, there's a name and address there, and it might well be the secretary or a treasurer of an angling club. But, well, anybody who belongs to angling clubs, you know, secretaries and treasurers don't necessarily live right next to the water, you know. Yeah. It could be somewhere else. It's only in later times, like sort of from the early 50s onwards, that sometimes Donald Leaney wrote on the invoice itself the name of the angling club. And, of course, that, you know, gives you a much more clear indication. So on one hand, I'm saying 90% of the time it came to nothing when I looked, interrogated these files. But I've got to tell you, some of the other 10%, the last 10%, some of them turned into spectacular finds. And, that, you know, really did sort of open your eyes now and then. And, one or two of them have been followed up as well. I mean, in the main, the real spectacular ones are on private property, but which I can't sort of really say about. And in some cases, I didn't know. But people have subsequently, which I've also got here under wraps, they've subsequently sent me fish from, you know, from these finds that we found. And, just fantastic fish.
Yeah, I bet they are. There's some lovely old wood carving, scalies.
Yeah, just perfect. And of course, in the main, often not angled for. And I'm not saying, you know, we're mistreating fish, but you know that they are pristine. They've hardly ever been caught. Some of these, they don't necessarily have to be absolute whackers. I can remember one that I got this year. I remember somebody sent me of, I think it was a 31 pounder. You know, it was, well, you could see Bill Quinlan or Jack Hilton holding that fish. It just looked like a Redmire fish in every proportion, just like a Redmire fish. Here's an important picture in the special album. In fact, to this day, I still think Angie Clayton is still the record holder of the woman who's caught the largest carp in this country, when she caught Herman.
From Warmwell.
That's it. Herman from Warmwell, the giant common carp.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it weighed 50 pounds. That's right. Well, this is the picture I've got here in the special album there. And... yeah, lovely lady. I did subsequently meet her. I remember she came to one of the shows. So there's Ian Russell on the same page with one of those, some of these fish I was talking about earlier on. We've got some sort of local stuff here. Oh, blimey. Right, a quick story here. I was contacted adopted by one day by a fellow I'd bumped into in the Con Valley, Danny Smith. And he said, I've just caught a whacker out of the Grand Union Canal. And I said, God, blimey, have you? And I said, is it possible we can get the story in picture? Yeah, sure, I'll send you the picture. And I remember getting the story from him off on the phone, this, again, before digital misses. And anyway, that's one part of the story. So, and it was, I think it was £42, absolutely glorious fish. People will probably remember that front cover.
Yeah, yeah, I certainly do.
Terrific fish. It was certainly a Canal record at the time. Can I just take you back to sort of 1984?
Yeah.
Part of the area, when I was on the road selling, I've been in the print game sort of all my life. When I was out selling equipment on the road, in the around 1981, my patch was changed or enlarged. Anyway, it included, which I'd never done before, to the whole of the west of London, right through the sort of Thames Valley. And this went right out from sort of Ealing, right out past places like Denham, obviously Savoy, it included all round the sort of Reading area. Yes, Burfield, Somme and I, all places like that, right down to include places like Longfield, etc. So, you know, while I'm out and about on the road, I'll make sure, of course, Raysbury was another one, I made sure that I could get in and see these places from time to time. And one day at Savoy, I was walking down the canal bank in my dump. Laugh when I say this, in my business suit, in my pinstripe, with a waistcoat probably as well, my pinstripe suit, obviously I had waders or boots on, in my lunch hour. And I'm walking down around the North Bay and down the canal bank. And there, I'd met him a couple of times through the BCSG at the time, the British Carp Study Group, and that was Lee Jackson. There was Lee fishing. And, oh, mate, how are you doing there? And he sat down and said, do you want a cup of tea? I said, yeah, I'll have a cup of tea. And I'm sitting there, and he's away. I mean, you know, one of them ones where the indicator stays at the top of the needle and the whole setup, you know, everything shook. This speed of this run. He leapt up. And it was one of those ones, I think it was on his right-hand rod. And it was cast towards the far pads on the other side. And this fish was moving so quick. People have probably noticed this when you see fish moving so quick that the line where it enters the water has a little sort of spout of water on it, you know? Where it's travelling so quick. It's kicking up. I mean, it was like that, I remember. And it swung on a long line to the right. And, of course, side strain, the more you pull, the worse it gets, you know? And this fish went right and right and pulled and pulled. It's a long way away. And it ended up, I saw his line getting closer and closer to the tree line as he was bent right over with the rod hooped right over to the right. And then the line's going through the trees and gradually just ground to a halt. And, you know, there was sighs and all that going on. Oh, God. No, it's stuck, you know. No, I'm going to lose it. It's stuck, you know. I said, hang on. Because I remember he had sort of, he had trainers on or something like that. And I said, hang on, give me your net. Give me your land here. Hang on. Let me just follow the line up. See if I can find it. About miles away, like 45, 50 yards away, I found it. There it was. With his mouth right up near the surface, stuck on a branch. And I broke all the branches, went through, and I got it. I netted it. And I shouted to, you know, back off, I've got it, you know, back off the line. And I picked the line, and anyway, we got it out and came down there, and there it was, £24, and it was, you know, it was great. It was quite a combined catch of that, and I took some photos and what have you.
Yeah.
Right, that's 1983, all right? So we now fast forward into 2000, something like that, when Danny Smith caught that fish. The day Carp Talk came out, that Wednesday, the phone goes at 9:05 in the morning. It's Lee from the tackle box. Chris, see that picture on the front cover? Danny Smith, Grand Union Canal. It's that fish you netted for me in 83.
The same fish.
Yeah, same fish. Now, what happened... in case people don't know, 88, 89, there was a significant flooding around the Denham area, and right down by the sluices, right on the south end of Savay, the River Colne the bank is quite narrow. It skirts, the River Colne skirts all the way up the sort of west side of Savay, and anyway, it flooded into it, and it was thought quite a number of fish had escaped. Nobody ever saw Sally, the wonderful common carp, you know, Sally Pride of our Valley.
I remember that one.
Of course, the Grand Union, the Colne is connected way, way up to the Grand Union. That fish had made all that way. And in the meantime, I put on £16 in weight.
That's a brilliant story, that.
It's an absolutely true story. I blink when I think of it myself. I do. I suppose I better admit to this one. I'm just looking at a picture here now that, when I shudder when I think about it, even now. When I was at Yateley, I was one of those lucky people I lived at Frimley, which is very close. And in 1979, Len Arbery kicked me the wink onto the carp potential at a number of the Yateley lakes. When they had been there, I mentioned earlier, they were there tench fishing, and they'd netted that fish for Gary Piles. Goodness me, I've remembered his name. There we are, Gary Piles. Which turned into Basil all those years later. So there were attention. But Leonard told me that he'd seen some pretty useful carp floating around several of the lakes. I mean, they weren't fishing for them. And he said, there's nobody there, you know. I'll have a look. So... it was naive days. I went with I think it was leisure sport angling then. With the rule book in my hand, and you know, sort of missed the entrance to the Match Lake as I went down Sandhurst Road on the right hand side. But I found the left hand entrance into what then was in front of you, the Car Park Lake. And then just followed my nose and found the North Lake, and then came back and found the Match Lake and had a look around there. And there was nobody, there was no cars in the car park here. And this was in the season, it was amazing. And I thought, So when I started getting up trees and having a proper look, not on that visit, on a subsequent visit, without any question of doubt, I saw more carp in the Match Lake than anywhere else. I saw numbers of them. I mean, I'm talking about dozens here, floating around and what have you. Whereas in the other lakes, I'd only seen sort of the odd carp. Though I had seen in 1970, in the same year, I had seen what is now, I mean, that's 35 years ago, it's still now the biggest carp, biggest looking carp I think I've ever seen in the water, and I've seen, you know, quite a few over the years from all the sort of venues that I've been to, it was a massive, huge, rotund fish. I always remember the tail. If you looked at it from on up the top of a tree, looked down on it. It looked about a foot wide, and the tail seemed to be stuck on. So when it moved, the tail would sort of go like 1,000 miles an hour, and the fish would move at maybe 0.5 miles an hour. And it was, I mean, I tried to catch it, had a floater on its nose for, several times, you know, waiting for it to breathe in at the right moment, stuff like that. Yeah. It never did. I wasn't the only one until October that year when I got a phone call Sunday night on Sunday evening, which is very unusual. I thought somebody had died. And it was Ken Odder and said, "Chris, that big fat one in the car park lake." I thought, "Oh, God, you caught yourself, caught it." He said, "How big do you reckon?" I said, remember, this is before Yatesy caught the red marfish, so the record in 1979 was still 44 pound, Walker's 44 pounder. I said, "Oh, it's got to be over 40 pounds. He said, no, it's over 40. I said, "Well, it's a record then." He said, no, it isn't a record. He said, and this is exactly what Ken said. I always remember this. I got into print saying this. He said, "No, it's 42 pound, Chris, and the gut on it is horrible." And obviously there was pictures taken. We never saw that fish. It expired sometime in the winter of 1979-1980, it was never seen again. But it was caught on a floater, so it was a floater caught record at the time. And in fact, the pair of them, him and Pete Springate, produced at the time the most amazing floater cake. It was red. It floated like, you know, you take a house brick to sort of lots of bubbles in there. I remember I catch, you know, quite a bit of them at various times. When I say quite a bit, half a dozen cubes now and then they let me have. And I did eventually catch one of the carp park fish on one. But I thought, naively at the time, they must have been sort of chefs or something like that. And when I asked Pete one day what he did, he said, "I'll fix washing machines." I couldn't believe it. their floater cake was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Anyway, just back to the story. So the following year, I decided to have a concerted effort at Yateley, and I decided on the match late. It's still pre-hair, 1980, or for me it was, pre-hair. It was the great red kidney era. And I baited up the red kidney beans, used on the hook, large hook, so bolt rig style, you know, with the hooks point showing outside. And, it turned into an amazing place. And in fact, first morning, by 6:30 on June the 16th, 1980, an incredible day throughout the country that was. It was an incredible day for me because by 6:30, I'd landed a brace of 20 pounders from, you know, a brand new lake. And up in the Colne Valley was the day that Redlands, the year that Redlands decided to allow access to Savay other than members of the Ruislip Angling Club. So they formed a Redlands, who were the riparian owners, formed a syndicate. And that day, you would have had the likes of Rod Hutchinson, Andy Little, Middleton, all casting a bait out for the first time at Savay. Also, at 9:30 on the same day, in another part of the country, Chris Yates broke the British carp record. So that all happened on June the 16th, 1980.
Oh, what a day.
Yeah, what a day. And this picture that I'm eventually getting back to, there's a picture of me leaning over, releasing a 19-pound, 4-ounce mirror into a lake, and this would have been around 82, and it was a time when the dear and long forgotten and sadly missed Terry Glebioska was around. I was fishing with Terry and Jan, and we were all at Yateley, and Terry was catching fish from the Match Lake and illegally at the time, illegally moving around the complex. Yeah. So not into, you know, the same water course, but, you know, not taking them off site, if you like, and putting them, you know, in a lake in the next county or anything, but over the road. And this is where a lot of the fish, extra fish from the car park came from, the Pads Lake, the nursery and the cops were seeded primarily by Terry, and they grew into, you know, some of these fish grew into, you know, the desirable Yateley carp that, you know, they grew and grew over the years. But he was there one day standing next to me when I had a bite, and eventually I got this fish in. But he said, "That's a nice looking one. Hang on, we'll move it. Yeah, we'll put it in that road, that lake over the road, that the car park lake. I'll put two in there, you know, earlier on. There's no, hardly any carp in there. There's plenty in here." I mean, he talked me into it. And I said, "Oh, all right, Terry." I mean, obviously, there was nobody about or anything. But I do remember that, I mean, I sort of shudder when I think of it. It was in a wet wasteland, and Terry put it in his haversack.
Oh dear.
And I remember the tail sort of being out at the top, and it moving around. It wasn't flapping around, but it was moving. And I followed Terry down the path over the little bridge over the River Blackwater, across the car park, just down the road, turned left at the car park, and then into the water's edge at the car park lake. And Terry said, "Hang on, I'll take a quick picture of you." And that's this picture I'm talking about here. And you know what that fish turned into be? That turned in to be a massive 40-pound plus carp called the Big Orange.
Wow,
it was 19-pound 4 ounces when I released it in there. Pictured Jack Hilton here with his first double-figure carp in 1960. That's a fantastic picture. There's pictures of Bill Quinlan here, of Tom Mintram, of Mike Winter, who sadly passed. And here's a picture of Yatesy. So, when he caught the record, nice little story here. We lived quite close together then. I lived in Guildford, and he lived not far from Farnham. And I fished with him, and I used to see a bit of him and what have you. And when he got back from Redmire, he returned on the 17th, on the evening of the 17th, and he rang me and obviously told me about this 51-pound, 6-ounce mirror that he caught on opening evening. And he said, "I need to find, and can you find for me where the weights and measures office is at Guildford, because they're bound to have one, because Guildford's quite a big place." He said, "Because I need to get these scales checked." So I said, "Fine, okay." Anyway, the following day he came to the house, and that house had a front door that had a sort of glazed strip down the middle, frosted glazed strip, so you could see he was standing there. And obviously, as I went up to the door, I could see it was him, you know, over six foot and thin as a rake. And anyway, he came in. It's the first time I'd seen the Redmire scales. Now, these were purchased by Jack Hilton in 1968. The syndicate, the 10-man syndicate, chipped in a bit of money each and bought these very fancy Salter large brass scales weighing to 60 pounds. Roger Smith made a very nice box, wooden box for them to sit in, and they resided at Redbar in the little hut there from 1968 to 1984. And every notable fish, certainly every 20 pounder that was ever landed at Redmire during those periods, were weighed on these scales. So, pretty important scales. So, anyway, I came in, looked at them, and what have you. And then Chris went off. I'd obviously found out where it was, somewhere in Guildford. And he said, I'll come in on the way back. And it's gone quite a while, I remember that, at least an hour. And then the doorbell went again, and I could see it was him, and this actually happened. I opened the door sort of in a flurry, you know. He stood there, looked me straight in the eye and said, "They're wrong." I went, "What? What? What?" He says, "Yes." He said, "Weighing 2 ounces light, true weight, 51.8. So there we are. So I was probably the second or third person to know the true weight. So 51.6 on the bank, weighing 2 ounces light, and that's where we get, 51 pound 8 ounces. And when all the fuss had died down, I went to his house, all his pictures for years. He's still got it now, the same camera, a high quality Bronica, 2¼ square. With a high-resolution lens, an upmarket, upmarket 2¼ camera. And one of the features of that kind of camera is that you could take the back off, and obviously it was film, and you could replace, like, a black and white back that, say, had 12 exposures on a roll, take that off and put on the colour back so that you get another. And they were 12 black and white pictures and 12 colour taken on his Bronica, laid out on his front room table. And he said, "Which one would you like? Choose which one would you like?" And I've got to tell you, out of all of them, to start with, the 12 black and whites I preferred, and I chose one. And this is the one I'm looking at now. And quite interesting, this, another little sort of silly little fact. It's got to Chris, best fishes, Chris Yates. And that's one of the first times he started writing his signature of best fishes, as opposed to best wishes. On the opposite page, lovely dedicated picture from Lee Jackson when he caught 2-ton. At 61 pounds 7 ounces, so we've got two record fish looking at one another from the pages. What's going on here? Oh, blimey! There's so many fish. Well, you can't. That rather stops you in your tracks when you open on this page. There's a picture of Mike Wilson with a glorious Sabay fish, a 30-pound leather. Caught from the period where he really sort of had the place to himself, which was the sort of mid-70s, those few years up until 1980 when the syndicate started. And, yeah, that is such a marvellous picture, that is. Yeah, fantastic. And the following page, it just blew everybody away, this picture, when it first saw the light of day. It's the Kent record caught in the 70s by Roy Johnson. It was 35 pounds, 12 ounces. And the picture was taken by Peter Smith, who first-class photographer, who's still around these days, Pete. I don't know what's happened to Roy Johnson, though. I heard or seen anything of Roy Johnson for years. And he was called out to Linton Park in Kent to take this dramatic picture of this 35-12 that appeared on the front cover of the BCSG magazine. People listening to that have belonged to BCSG a long time will remember that picture. Funny enough, Mark, it's black and white, see? Power of black and white.
Yeah, sometimes a black and white has more impact than colour.
Yeah, it is quite amazing. I am just looking here. Paddy Webb from the news desk at Carp Talk about 5 years or maybe more ago now, rang one day and said, I'm going to send you a picture now, and I don't want you to sort of, break out into a sweat too much, but I think you might be impressed. And it made the front cover the following week, and it was that amazing Caravan Park mirror, that linear mirror. Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of people know it now. This is one of the first times it was a sort of given sort of public exposure. Oh, I mean, even now, just looking at it now, I mean, I can't. It's within the last 10 years, this picture. Staggering fish.
Oh, yeah. I remember that picture because I was fishing St Ives Lagoon at the time and found out from another fella on there where it was. So, it's not a big lake, so I thought it'd be rude not to drive up and have a look and inquire about how to fish it. And, well, the fella who owns it kind of like lives on in this lovely house that backs onto the lake. And, well, how people get tickets is you write a letter and then you carry on writing one every year and if you're lucky, you get on. But I tried the different way of just, bullying a china shop, knocking on his door and asking for one. But when this old fella answered the door, and I'm 6.5 foot, long-haired, scruffy Herbert, I never got a ticket. But yeah.
Really?
No. I could have followed up writing letters, but I did a couple of years, but then just forgot 1 year and never carried on. But you're right, though. What a fisher that is. Yeah. I've seen pictures of like Lee Walton and Dave Moore with
Subsequent have been caught I remember Lee Walton catching it. One of the outstanding looking fish in this country. Because for many years I've sort of championed the way that, size isn't everything. The way fish look are to be, sort of applauded as well. When you get fantastic good looks and big size as well, bingo, it sort of all comes together. Just turning the page again, there's four pictures here. Another person who, there's only two or three that have commanded a whole page. And this is Hampshire Graham, who sort of is under the radar a bit. And he gave me these four pictures of biggins quite some time ago. And they are, every one of these fish is a 40-pounder. Caught from three different lakes. And he gave them me, he says, you can have these, Chris. He said, on the understanding that you're never to publish them, but you can put them in that album thing of yours. which I did. There's a wonderful page here of Jack Hilton, and, I know I've mentioned him more than once. There's four pictures on this page, and two of them are Red Mile fish, and two of them are Ashley fish. And in this day and age, it's hard for sort of younger carp anglers to sort of realise the massive influence and following, if you like, that sort of Jack Hilton had. I was very lucky to meet Jack a few times and knew him in the height of his carp. He was a big fish angler, but he's known primarily for his carp catches at the height of his sort of big carp catching era. For instance, in 1967 and 1973, he topped the big carp, top 10 big carp of the country in those years, and he appeared in two other top 10 carps, in the intervening years as well. It was just It's just an amazing roller coaster. I'll tell you what, not unlike young Simon Crowe at the moment, who, you know, has only got a look at the water and the largest fish jumps in his net, yeah?
Yeah, he's on a roll.
It's, without doubt. So, yeah, Jack Hilton, people that are sort of a little bit off the radar that people will know because they've come to, become more prominent in recent years. John Holt here, Secret John. That's a long field. Secret John, Longfield 40. Again, he gave me that picture. Don't you dare publish it, but I know it has been. I know it has been published, but not by me. Johnny Allen there, lovely picture. Johnny Allen with Mary. He fished and fished and fished, and he finally caught that fish. Another interesting fact here. Trevor, I can't think of this guy's second name. I know he wrote the Kent column in Carp Talk for us for a while. He was corresponding for the county of Kent. Can't remember his name. Anyway, it's a picture of 2-ton at 14 pound. So the record fish, the current record fish, when it was just 14 pound.
Is that the
year? And it's... Yeah, and it's next to the capture by Terry Glebioska at a record weight. Yeah, 59 pounds when Terry caught it. I'll tell you a little funny story about Terry, God rest his soul. And I fished with him between 1980 and about 1986 at several lakes we fished together. And he had at times a terrible stutter. When he was excited, it would be worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
And not that any of us is taking any notice of it at all. But I was fishing the day he caught that 59 pounder, a new British record carp. I was creeping around. I remember my phone going on the inside pocket. I was creeping around Frimley, I think. And it was Terry, and he's saying, Chris, Terry, here. I need to talk to you. And I could hear all this noise in the background, lots of noise, people shouting and what have you. And he said, Chris, people are telling me I've caught a record carp. Oh, blimey, have you, Terry? He said, yeah. He said, 59 pounds. Oh, I forget the ounces now. Oh, God, man, have you? He said, yeah. I said, oh, fantastic, you know. And I said, tell you what, you want to publicise it? Yeah, I don't mind publicising, because the big thing, there was two things about that capture. Obviously, it was a new, potential new British record carp. And secondly, it was caught on fake sweet corn, right, on Plastic Fantastic, you know, a real boost for the early days of Enterprise Tackle. And anyway, he was fine. His voice, he was coherent and everything. And I said to Terry, right, great, you know, you enjoy the moment. Get yourself all sorted out. I'll ring you tomorrow and I'll get the story, you know, on the phone from you, and we'll sort out. We'll get a motorbike courier to come and get the film or something or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you know, the following day when I rang him, when he was calm, you know, they'd had a few drinks the night before, he'd come home that night, so he'd had a night in bed, he'd sort of, you know, partially got over it all. Do you know, he couldn't string one word in front of another. It took me isn't that ridiculous, where he was relaxed and what have you, and it took me over half an hour to get the story, out of it, because poor chap, he was stuttering so much, you know. That'll probably make people laugh that know him. I'm just one or two more pages because we can go on all flipping day. I'm just looking at notable sort of people in here. marvellous picture of Hutchinson here. When he caught the King's Mead fish, he fished and fished for that fish. In fact, he caught it twice in the end. And it was a whopper. Anybody that's got the carp strikes back, I think it's in that one. And on the same page is more or less the same time, it might be the same year or the year before, another picture of Secret John Holt, when Johnny Holt caught it. Because that's another one that people didn't realise he'd caught at the time. Got Keith the Tooth there with the Harrow Biggie. We've got the Surrey Record here, 1966 this is. This is by the late John Brough, and I fished that lake a few years afterwards. Not that I caught anywhere near a 33-pounder, 33-12 that was. All right, let's make this the last story, Mark. Let's make it the last one. I smile when I see it. Every time I look at this picture, I smile. Sadly, it's of another person who's died. But he was a friend of mine and quite a notable angler around for all kinds of fish. But he had a go at carp as well. Now, he in the early 80s, he fished at Longfield, and it was mega tough going. I mean, like a lot of the lakes. In 82 was when the key was unlocked. You know, somebody put a key in that tight shut door of Longfield, turned it with a thing called a hair rig, and suddenly, you know, the whole world turned upside down. They were quite susceptible, those Longfield fish, to floater fishing. I managed to catch shoulders myself from there. And one of these mates of mine, he would creep around and see them floating around and try for them. Anyway, in his lunch hour, he worked close by at Staines. There's an engineer, I think. And this picture, he's still got his boiler suit on. Not like for fishing boiler suit. He'd just come from work in his lunch hour. He was a tool maker or something like that. And he got onto this slightly bit of open bank called the Ruin. And a few fish floating about. Blimey. Slung out a floater. So before mixer, that would have been a floater cake. Or a bit, I don't know, a bit of bread. No, it was probably floater cake, knowing Brian. And anyway, a whacker's grabbed hold of it, and a titanic struggle, and he eventually gets it near the bank and looks round, and in his haste to come out, he's got his net. He's got no landing there. He's got a monster carp on, he's got no landing there, and he suddenly shouted out at the top of his voice, you know, "Help, help, anybody there?" Because he hadn't seen anybody. "Is there anybody there? I need a net, need a net." And who should come out? Who should come out of the trees but dear old Richie? So Richie McDonald appeared with his big lead army landing net. And this fish was plunging on like about 15 foot of line off the rod tip, right? You know, just moving around, knackered, moving around. And before Richie got in the water to net it, he gave Brian McEwen, the chap I'm talking about, a bollocking for coming fishing at a place like Longfield without a landing net. and tore him off a strip. Tore him off a right strip, you know, with his monster carp under his feet. And after he'd done that and felt he'd suitably chastised him, he then went and netted it. It was 33, 34 pounds. It was. So there we are. There's a few stories from the special album. I've just put one or two little notes down here that I'd mentioned that I was going to do this to one or two people that carp cast. And they said, "Oh, you should tell them about this. Tell them about that." I mean, one thing and the mate round here the other day, and he was looking at some old pictures and that, and he said, when did you catch your first carp? And I said, in 1959. And he quickly did on his fingers. He says, you know, you've caught carp in 7 decades. I went, Jesus, I have. Yeah. 7 decades, yeah. 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, noughties, and 2010. So, yeah, amazing. I caught my first double, Mark, in 1961 when I was 15 years old. By design, three-line ledgered potato. How about that?
I say, Chris, this has been thoroughly enjoyable listening to all these stories. From the
yeah, well, there's so many stories, and so I mean, if people listen to this, they want to have a look at one or two of the special albums. I'll be at Sandown and then at Five Lakes sort of next year. But they are, you've had just sort of a little bit of potted history.
Yeah, you're still doing that series in Cart World as well. Is that ongoing?
Yes, still doing the historic cart walks. Yeah, I've had some lovely comments over the years. I've had some recent comments about the Frensham ones. You know, that's another amazing period in my life my angling life when they're at the right time. I mean, we can all sort of relate, I'm sure, to periods, where you just happen to be there at the right time. With the right method, with the right tackle, and keen, you know. But there again, I'm still mad keen for it, you know. I was out 2 or 3 times last week. Still catching them off the top, I'm glad to say. Last week, that last 90 minutes of light, you know, just local lakes here. I mean, 4 o'clock went back on Saturday, but last sort of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday sort of that, 20 to up past 4 to 6 o'clock period, they are so susceptible on the top as that light goes, because we've had these overcast conditions for quite a few days now. So, yeah, it still makes the old Mitchell churn a bit, but I've never lost any, and so I got them all in. So, yeah, still thoroughly enjoying it.
Oh, that's great to hear. I hope... Well, I can guarantee I'm going to still be enjoying it when I'm, not saying you're old, Chris, but, you know, when I'm advancing in years.
Well, there's a whole load of us, a lot of them, my friends that are in this, around this 70 years old period, and for me, that's next year, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the biggest, inspirations to me is Tim Paisley, who is in his 70s and he's still going.
He certainly is an amazing, amazing bloke in many ways.
Yeah. I've been going on a little bit longer than the hour that we stated at the when we set this up. So, thank you. Thanks for talking to us. And it's stories like this that make the podcast work.
Yes, indeed. Well, yeah, I hope it goes well. And you've already had some great people on, and I've listened to a few of them. And yeah, as they say, the show's got legs. It has. Right? There's so many people with access now to the internet and what have you that, yeah, it's another way. It's another medium, yeah?
Yeah, it is. And, well, the only thing that surprised me is that no one had done it before us. When people could download it to their smartphone and just listen while they're fishing on the bank, it's kind of tailor-made for carpers.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I've seen it all sort of over the years. And, social media is here to stay. Like it or love it or whatever, yeah?
Yeah, it does have its ups and downs.
True.
Thanks again. Thanks for talking to us, Chris Ball.
OK, no problem. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Well, thank you to Chris. Some amazing stories. You got the best out of him, I think, Mark.
Yeah, you know what? I think he could have gone on for another 2 hours as well.
He's another one we can get back in the future.
Yeah, and also, if you go to any of the shows, Popo, I think it's the Carp Talk stand, he said he'd be on, and check out the special album, which will be there, because there really is special fish in it. Stories, well, as he said, he knows the story behind every single one of them.
Yeah. Does he take the book then to all the shows so you can just go and have a look?
Yeah, yeah. I've seen him at Five Lakes with it again in the past, but last time I went there, and you know, it's mesmerised me. You know, for someone like me who's a bit of a a carp geek, you know, just looking at all these fish and. I had to stop myself from drooling on it.
Wow. Yeah, cool. Something else I saw on the net this week. Tasker have bought Nutribait and Criston. Or Criston, is the proper name.
Criston, I always call it Criston.
Yeah, I think it's Criston. And Dave of Northwest fame, who named most of his products after his stargazing hobby. He's a big watcher of he's got telescopes and all sorts, and a lot of his stuff like Supernova and a lot of his products are named after starry stuff. But yeah, his Nutribait and Criston have been sold to Tasker by the look of it. Tasker going from strength to strength. They are at the Northern Angling Show, by the way. Get your tickets, northernanglingshow.co.uk. Loads of special offer packs on there as well, like VIP packs where you get a free ticket, basically, and some nice gear. Tasker have a huge stand at the show right by the stage. We'll do a Northern Angling Show special next week, actually. We've got we're going to do all the announcements for people on stage. We've got a few big names on there and some fantastic stuff. Other than the Carpcast Live, because we're going to have a Carpcast stand. We're going to interview everybody while we're there. We'll do a little show on the Saturday where you can come and see us waffle in person. But yeah, if you want a ticket for the Northern Angling Show, it's northernanglingshow.co.uk. You can do that. Tickets, how much are they? They're about 10 quid with the booking fee, I think. And like I said, there's some special offer VIP ones on there. Yeah, I'm interested to see what Tasker do with Nutribait and Criston. But it seems a lot of these companies are expanding, buying up smaller companies and, you know, having like covering everything, having a bait firm, having end tackle, having, you know, the equipment.
It does seem the way. I mean, if you look at, you know, Preston Innovations have Corum, Sonobaits and Avid, and you get bigger companies like, well, remember Leader? You know, yeah. Now like the umbrella over quite a few different companies. Look at Svensson, they have like, you know, your ProLogic, your Savage Gear, Akuma, you know, Ron Thompson with their umbrella and lots of others.
Should we do a carp ain't sheep?
Meh.
Carp are not sheep.
It's that time of year again where people keep putting pictures of their sponsor contract. It's been winding me up, and I'm glad you've put it in the notes, because the private Nash group, which is for consultants only, once again, there's been a yearly message in there saying, please don't post pictures of the boxes of free gear that you're getting for sponsorship. Well, it might not always be free, but discounted, you know, a trade price or whatever. Like, it just winds people up and makes you look like a dick. Agreed?
Yes. Definitely agreed. And it's just kind of a big I am sort of post. You know, you're not really doing anything for the company by doing it. You do things for the company by, discreet, plugs here and there. And, you know, going to shows and writing articles and making videos. Not posting things saying, oh, I've got a contract.
Yeah, I don't like it. You shouldn't do it, you know. And they always disguise it. It's always a thin brag. They always disguise it as, oh, really proud to be associated with X company once again. And you don't need to do that. I understand you might be proud of it, but come on. Don't put a picture of your contract or any gear that you get. Do your graft. Use the stuff. Catch some fish. Let us see pictures of it. Let people ask you what you've caught on. And do your articles. It's I don't like it. It's narcissistic, and it just makes other people resentful. If I kept seeing somebody, let's make a company up because I don't want to single anybody out, but you know, some guy kept posting pictures of free boxes of bait or his contract, I would deliberately not buy anything from that firm.
That would be the classic carp co.
I would go out of my way to avoid it. It makes people resentful, and there's enough green-eyed people in fishing anyway, without rubbing it in their face. You know, there's promote the company, do your job. Don't post pictures of your free swag or even worse, your contract. I mean, that's a new one this year, which is why it's made the sheep section.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a marketing expert by a long shot, but just give me your opinion on this. Do you think it is better to create curiosity rather than shove it down people's throat?
100%. If I saw a picture of a guy stood in front of his bivvy, pointing to his bivvy and go, look at my new Nash Groundhog, isn't this sick?
I use a Nash Groundhog.
Yeah, they're great bivvies. So that's just one that came to the top of my head, right? Yeah. But that is going to make, that is not going to make me want to buy it as much as of if I just saw a picture of a guy, you know, stood in his peg, doing whatever he does, playing a fish or whatever, and I saw a really cool looking bivvy behind him. I'd be more, it would stick in my head more. I think it's worth more from a marketing point of view. If I message the guy and say, what was that bivvy called? It's behind you. That looks really smart. You know, that's worth way more than having it drilled. I mean, I'm sure I'm not a marketing expert either, although I have marketed for a lot of my own companies over the years. And, you know, the best adverts on TV, say, all the Christmas adverts are out now, aren't they? They don't mention the company most of the time. It just, they make an interesting advert that kind of leaves you wanting more, or, you know, it moves you or touches you emotionally or whatever it is. And then just at the very end, it will say the name of the company. And some adverts don't even do that. You know, the days of drilling things at you are gone. I think you need to be a little bit more clever and create the demand as opposed to force it on people. I think it's a much better way.
Yeah, I've got two examples from the fishing world that I think are both brilliant, and that's Fox's Challenge with Mark Pictures and the Urban Banks. They are advertising with entertainment.
Exactly. Did we talk about the new Urban Bank 7.5?
Yeah, we did that last time.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I watched it the other day.
Anyway. It's good.
Yeah, I watched it in full. Yeah, it's pretty decent. But again, yeah, the pictures challenges. It's a much better way of marketing equipment. You're giving people some content. But yeah, posting pictures of contracts is detrimental, I think, as opposed to it's just a brag, isn't it? It's a thin brag.
Yeah, we're going to have to write each other a Carpcast contract and post pictures.
Do you know you what are actually... hereby summoned to nothing again.
No, you are hereby summoned to spend more on hosting.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's SoundCloud bill today, actually. I noticed.
Yeah. Do you know, what I did this week as well?
Mm-hmm.
I have not posted it yet, but I will and I will tag you in it. I took a picture of my 24-pound fish in the retainer sling in the water.
No. I saw that beautiful looking specimen, the second fish that you had this week. Oh, my spot. God. I'm not sure I took a picture of that one.
Yeah, it's a fish that broke a blank spell. I don't care what they look like or how big they
are. Like he broke his neck on the way out.
Yeah, it was, it was just retarded. I'm not sure that's a politically correct word, but I hooked it. It did nothing. It was pitch black. It did nothing to tell me it was anything other than a bream. I got it in the edge, and when I catch a bream, you know, I'm in my wellies in the water, I bring it in, I just grab a hold, I unhook them and let them go back for someone else to catch them who was going to appreciate them. That's exactly what was happening with this fish until I put my head torch on in the edge and it turned into a mirror bream. So I quickly grabbed the landing net and scooped him up and thought, oh. But I was that happy to, you know, to break a 10-night blank. I just shouted, get in, I don't care what it looked like.
I'd have rather blanked.
Oh, you're just ungrateful. A carp is a carp. Oh, you're going to tell me to keep it real in a minute.
Cool, right. Well, that's it for this week. We hope you've enjoyed it again. We will be back next Friday for number 22 with Ian Russell. We spoiled that one for you, but yeah, it's Ian Russell, and it is a fantastic interview. I'm sure you'll learn stuff and hopefully be entertained. So from us, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.